Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome. We're going to get ahead and get started. We're already a couple minutes over. My name is Jackie McLean, and I am a health communication specialist at the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases. Welcome to today's session, Developing a Social Media Strategy. Now, I'm not sure how many of you attended the social media session just prior to this, but earlier we heard a really nice overview of the various types of social media tools and how they can be a really effective way to reach your target audiences. However, the success of these social media tools largely depends on how it fits into an overall communication plan and how it complements existing communication activities. And given the limited time and resources that we all have, and given the vast array of different social media tools that are already out there, let alone the ones that continually evolve, how do we determine what we pursue? What channel do we choose? And more importantly, how do we determine what we're doing is successful? So I know that these questions have been on the forefront a lot of folks who do communication planning. So hopefully today our panel will help shed a little light on this and help you try to figure out how you can make social media work for you. So it's my pleasure to introduce our panel. First, we have Ann Aiken and Holly Seitz, and they will share a step-by-step approach in developing a social media strategy. And I know that this was touched on a little bit in earlier today's session, so hopefully this will give you a little bit of a more in-depth overview of that. Ann and Holly both work for CDC's social media team. Ann leads the new media research activities and works to develop innovative health communication products that engage users and expand the reach of CDC science. Additionally, she began leading the social media strategy for CDC's emergency communication response, including the H1N1 pandemic, several salmonella outbreaks, and the recent earthquake response in Haiti. Holly Seitz is a public health analyst and social media specialist. She currently manages components of social media campaigns and media monitoring and is the team's blogging subject matter expert. Holly is also the social media team lead for the Joint Information Center, the communication component of CDC responsible for emergency response, and is helping to manage the agency's social media response, the ongoing response to H1N1. Next, Jeanine Corey is going to share with us the CDC's development and use of two H1N1 multimedia motion graphic pieces. Jeanine has a degree in epidemiology from Yale University and has worked in health education and health communication for the last 18 years, including writing and producing print, online, and multimedia tools for a wide variety of target audiences. Her work experience includes many years at a state health department, academics, and private industry, as well as her current position as a health communications specialist at CDC. And finally, we have Dawn Crawford, who will share some examples of social media outreach in Colorado. Dawn is the Colorado Children's Immunization Coalition's communications director and a freelance social media consultant, and is truly passionate about nonprofit communications. She strives to create strategic integrated marketing and communications plans with a special emphasis in harnessing the new technology of social media. She lives life loudly and gardens to make the world a more beautiful place. So we have a lot of ground to cover today, so I'd appreciate if we would hold all questions till the end. So hopefully we'll have some lively discussion, and I'm sure that Dawn would be happy to entertain questions about gardening after 5 o'clock. So. All right, so Ann and Holly, want to take the floor?
Good afternoon, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here. My name's Ann Aiken. This is Holly Seitz. We work together in the Office of Communications, and we specifically do social media, working with campaigns like seasonal flu that Jeanine works on, and some other campaigns to sort of integrate a social media strategy into current communication activities to make sure that we can maximize reach, increase access to information, encourage participation and engagement with messages, that sort of thing. And so we also really like social media because we can reach diverse audiences, sometimes better than we can with traditional media, and we might talk a little bit about that, but we certainly can touch on that more in the discussion period. And ultimately, we really want to use social media to facilitate interactive communication in the community and empower people to make healthier and safer decisions. So our strategy has been to employ lots of different tools and technologies, but to have, and some of which live on CDC, some of which CDC.gov, some of which live off-site, but to have those really influence what's going on at CDC and link back and have links from CDC back. We also have CDC Info, which is a 24 hours a day, 7 days a week call center. So we can actually refer people to that, and it comes in very handy when we write things like text messages. So if you're using your phone, you want to be able to use something similar. You just click the number and call it. And this is just something I think. I don't know if this is actually something CDC would agree with, but we feel that social media really does help us make our content more available to people because it's living out there in multiple spaces. It can help you develop a more consistent message. It can expand your reach, and it can encourage repetition of your messages. And it really does facilitate a timely response or a timely, really quick way to get messages out. One sort of interesting piece of data that we've looked at recently has been on CDC.gov, we have a customer satisfaction survey. And so we've been monitoring satisfaction for a number of years, but what we've recently found is that those who report using CDC social media tools are actually more satisfied with the site, and it's 5 points, which is a very large, difference in customer satisfaction scores. We've been measuring that for a number of years, and typically it won't really change much more than a point. Users also are more likely to return and recommend the site to others and rate CDC's content as more trustworthy. So I sort of mentioned some of the things that we like about social media. The other thing is that these media tend to have existing networks that people have already built up. So if you think about Facebook and how many friends you have on Facebook, that's a network of people that you can push messages out to very, very easily. You think about email, all the people that you have in your email box, people on Twitter have followers, that sort of thing. So you can actually very easily send messages out to people in your network, and we want to capitalize on that. We want to encourage people to take CDC's messages and send them out to a variety of people. So one of our other sort of recommendations to people is that they look at metrics, and we have a metrics dashboard that Holly will talk a little bit more about where we put up our metrics, but we really do like looking at metrics. There are a lot of metrics available with social media that can help you monitor trends, report usage, and gauge success of what you're doing. And we also want to evaluate what we're doing to make sure that there is some impact there. This comes from the Edelman Trust Barometer. And what they found, which I think is fairly interesting, is that about 60% of people need to see a message 3 to 5 times before they view it as credible. And so we think that social media really does help with that because we can easily repurpose messages in many, many formats. And we really want to go where people are. So this is just sort of a brief synopsis of the popularity of many of these channels, but you know, Facebook, for instance, is the second most popular website in the world. People spend almost an hour a day. They go back to it many, many times. About 90% of adults in America have cell phones. And you know, you used to hear about the digital divide with internet sites. Well, it's really helping to bridge that because the access that people have to internet content is so much greater, you know, via mobile phones, and so on and so forth. We also want to create content that's portable, and that's kind of a strange term, but what I mean by that is content that can live in other spaces. So, a podcast that you can take on your iPod is an example of portable content. You can carry it with you. We create a lot of widgets, and those can live on many different spaces, and people can interact with them on other sites where they normally go to. Because we really don't expect that people will come to CDC.gov for all of their health information. And in fact, we know that they don't. So there are more popular health sites out there, and Pew Internet has done some research which talks about how people find health information. They really do go to these very popular sites like WebMD, or they go to Google and they do a search and they go to multiple spaces. So we really do want to capitalize on that. The other thing is we want to encourage interaction, advocacy, and participation with content. And, you know, again, you know, Facebook, when we post messages, that is, it appears in people's status updates. They can send it out to other friends and help advocate for your messages. They can participate with your messages by liking your content or writing a comment or repurposing it and writing a tweet or a blog, that sort of thing. And I talked a little bit about this, but we really do want to capitalize on people's ability to share information virally. And the e-cards that we have are sort of one example of that. So people can, and they do, email a card to multiple people. And so we have really great evidence of people sending them out to their church groups. We have evidence of nurses sending out cards to other nurses and physicians and encouraging them to get vaccines or flu shots, that sort of thing. And then, you know, one of our biggest priorities is mobile phones, and that is just because of the access and the reach that mobile provides. And that's personal and portable. So I'm going to turn it over to Holly now to talk about...
Thanks. So I think we could probably spend days working with each of you to develop a social media strategy, because there are many things to think about and consider, but we've tried to just distill what we kind of know and think into a few steps to think about as you're developing a social media strategy. And actually, from what I've heard about the panel earlier today, I think some of this is going to definitely echo that, build on it, and really complement. So I really appreciate you setting us up so beautifully. And I think our first steps may actually be very similar. And the first step, and again, these are very arbitrary steps, this is kind of what we think. There's no official, this could be broken down many ways. But before you begin any activity in the social media space, it's so valuable to hear what people are saying, especially people that you want to communicate to. And so often social media spaces can be so different from traditional communication and also so different from each other that it's really valuable to listen in each of the social media spaces. You can easily monitor social media channels, even free of charge, by using search.twitter.com, by using Google Blog Search or Technorati Blog Search, and just by entering a few keywords, you can easily get a pulse on what people are saying about a particular topic area. It can also help you identify opinion leaders. This is something that might be valuable to you, especially if you're planning to maybe reach out into the community and connect with any of the opinion leaders. So maybe there's a very popular and widely read mom blogger who's talking about an immunization issue. That's somebody you want to know about because she's being heard, she's being listened to, and it's good to be aware of what messages are going out through that channel. We also, you know, we used monitoring of social media channels quite a bit throughout the H1N1 activity because we wanted to know if there was misinformation, if there were maybe some gaps in knowledge that we could fill through our communication, or if there was a trending topic, something that was really hot that was being discussed. We wanted to be a part of that conversation. And also, monitoring and listening can really help you learn how to build a message for a particular channel. The way that people build a tweet is very different from how they build a Facebook post, is very different from how they write a text message. So observing all of those channels can help you see some of the standards and the way that people communicate in those channels. We also very much upfront recommend that as part of an overall strategy, we very clearly define the objectives. And this is very much like any communication objectives you might set. They're just specific for social media spaces. So you can kind of have your general objectives, but I have SMART here to remind us to always strive toward those SMART objectives, which I always have to have a little cheat sheet because some people choose different ones for the different letters, but specific, measurable, attainable or achievable, relevant or realistic, and time-bound. And I'll say that CDC has a lot of great evaluation type resources and also good resources for developing SMART objectives, so I encourage you to check those out.
also very much up front because it hugely affects which channels you choose to implement in a social media strategy, as well as developing your messages. Very clearly defining your audiences and the communication needs of those audiences. So we want to be very specific here. And then when it comes to communication needs, we may need to do a little bit of research, a little bit of asking to figure out what information that audience wants to know and how they want it delivered. A lot of times, Ann and I will say that our goal in social media is to develop credible, science-based health information when, where, and how the user wants it. And social media can very much meet those needs as long as we know what those needs are. And I should say, too, that there are a lot of different resources out there for finding this type of information. At CDC, we try to pull together information in our social media data briefs. We love the Pew Internet and American Life Survey. They have wonderful, very current data. So I encourage you to look into some of those different resources for finding information about your particular audience and the channel that you're considering. And then, these are just some things to think about as you prepare before you actually launch into the development. And these are points that I think are important to make. Making connections and building relationships before you launch an activity can be very important. A lot of times, you know, we're not the content experts. We are merely the social media implementers. And so if we need a particular subject matter expert, we have to have that relationship built and have their buy-in and their trust before we can ever launch an activity and it be successful. Because none of our work will succeed without really good content and access to the experts. We also have found that it's really valuable to educate leadership, to share throughout an organization about the types of work that you're doing, why you're doing it, sharing successes, to try to get buy-in before you launch an activity. And also, we've mentioned here ironing out legal, technical, and/or budget issues. Within CDC, we have to be very careful that our activities aren't compromising the security of the network. We have to make sure that we're meeting requirements for compliance with Section 508, making sure that all of our information is accessible to everyone who might want to use it. We have to make sure that clearance procedures are in place before we launch an activity so that those messages aren't bogged down in a system. We've worked with the communication professionals and leaders, and they know how this message, this tweet, is going to be cleared through a program. And then also, very important, to think about your staff time and availability, because that may have a huge impact on what activities you decide to launch. For example, maintaining a blog and responding to comments requires more content and a little more time than maybe repurposing web articles on a Facebook page or just tweeting about it. So each channel has some different requirements for staff and for resources.
So as with any communications project that you might be working on, you're going to have to develop messages and concepts. And, you know, I'm sure that you're all very familiar with doing that. But with social media, there are some special sort of things you need to think about. And we're actually doing a lot of work and really sort of evaluating and looking at how to create really great messages in some of these different spaces. So if you're writing text messages, you're limited to 160 characters. If you're writing a tweet, our best practice is 120 characters, but Twitter will allow 140. So when you're shortening those messages, you really want to make sure that it's clear to people what you're talking about, that it's compelling, that your messages are relevant and actionable, and you know, effective. And so, you know, you can do that by developing the messages and visual concepts and really thinking that through, testing them, refining and repeating them. But we have guidance up on the CDC social media page for people on how to write some of these, you know, different kinds of messages. We also sort of, as we move through these steps, you know, so now you've thought about what your content is, you've thought about who your audiences are, you've thought about what your communication objectives are, you've listened to people, and now's the time when you pick the tools. You don't sort of start off saying, we're going to do a Facebook page, or we're going to do something in Twitter without really having, you know, communication objectives. And it really should sort of, your decision should be made on the, by the channel based on those communication objectives and those audiences that you want to reach. So you know, you really do want to select your tools sort of midway through your process. And we do have, as Holly said, data briefs, so which sort of show which audiences is which using which tools. And, you know, it's not, you know, there are tools that are more appropriate for certain audiences than others. So, for instance, you know, Twitter is very popular with adults, you know, and it's really popular with certain racial and ethnic groups, so it might be good if that's who you're trying to reach. If you're trying to reach kids, maybe not. You know, so there's different tools that are really going to work. And then you want to create an evaluation plan. We have people that come to us and they want to do something and they think that the activity is over, but you really do want to have in your mind, you know, promotion and evaluation plans before you start. And you know, I said sort of very briefly earlier that there's so many different metrics, it can be a little bit overwhelming, I think. So really sort of trying to pinpoint what you're going to measure and how it's, you're going to determine your success before you launch a project, I think is really important. And then how you're going to evaluate your activities. And we can talk more about that if you guys want to. So turn it back over to Holly.
Sure. So we wanted to show you a few examples of ways that we had implemented. And actually, I think I'm going to go back to just show a couple of examples down here. You can see here that not only are these different tools featured at the bottom reaching different audiences, but they also are meeting different objectives. So for example, Twitter is very time-based. It's for people who really want information. They may want it on the go. You can actually have Twitter sent to your mobile phone via text message. Whereas, you know, the H1N1 flu widget may be for someone who really wants their information more in a web-based format. They're going to be spending time on the web. They want to interact a little more with it. And then, you know, the text messaging may hit at a totally different audience who wants to interact solely via their mobile phone. So this is an overview, a very overwhelming overview, of some of the many tools that we developed for H1N1. And we're gonna select just a couple of these. So I find that Facebook is really good. It hits a very broad audience now. We find that sort of the middle-aged group of women are actually the fastest growing group on Facebook because I think they're finding new ways to connect. I find a lot of new grandparents are joining Facebook because they find they get to see pictures of the grandbabies that way. We already know that young people from high school, kind of through that young adult phase, are huge users of Facebook. But I also think they kind of use it in different ways, and we can tailor our activities to that. Our activity on Facebook is hitting at a broader audience because we're posting CDC-wide information. But you certainly could tailor it to a specific audience. Currently, we're posting CDC.gov feature articles. So in a way, we're repurposing content. So if you perhaps have a smaller staff, the content generation is really time intensive, you can find ways to broaden the dissemination of your materials and also cut out that content creation step. Obviously, you're going to want to tailor it to the medium, as we discussed earlier. You know, if it's a tweet, you know, we rely heavily on referring people back to CDC.gov for that full information. So we may have the title of a document or update a document in the title, or we'll distill the main message into the tweet and provide a link. And the same for Facebook, because it is a medium where people are just going through reading updates very quickly. We have a little intro paragraph, and then they come to CDC.gov for the full article. So as you can see here, Facebook users are spending lots of time on the site on average, and it's a forum where you can really have some deep interaction and engagement, because that's why people come to Facebook. They want to engage and connect. The CDC Facebook page was actually launched last May in the height of H1N1, and we have accrued about 55,000 fans over the past year and people who come and comment on our posts daily. We also launched, and this was very different from the Facebook endeavor, a text messaging pilot launched last September. And what we wanted to do here was really look at the feasibility of disseminating primarily flu messages in the beginning. Now we brought into some other health topics. And we wanted to look at, is it feasible? How do people like to get those messages? Will they participate? Do they want it? Do they like it? And so in the beginning, we were doing primarily flu prevention messages, vaccination messages. Over time, we found it's really evolved into a good emergency communication tool. We've used it for health-related flood warnings or winter storm warnings. And what's great about this is that using the mobile phone really allows you to tailor much more than you might with another type of social media, because we know their zip code, because they gave it to us when they signed up and answered some demographic questions that were optional, but most people chose to do that. We know if they're male or female, we know their age, and we could, or you could, easily collect more information and tailor your messages appropriately. So if there's Midwest flooding, we're only sending it to subscribers in the states that are affected. And you can see we, at last count, had a little over 16,000 subscribers. And then, again, a very different activity. This one hits at a very specific audience, which is kids 8 to 12. What's interesting about kids is that, as you know, they share health messages with their parents. So this was started probably about 4 years ago. And we work with YVille, which is a virtual world created specifically for tweens, kids 8 to 12. And it was all founded on science and education principles. And so our work with them has been a bit of an epidemiology lesson for the kids who are involved, because they watch the spread of a virtual flu vaccine throughout their virtual world in the traditional real-world flu season. This past year, because we add something fun and new every year to keep their attention, this year we added a second strain of flu and a second vaccination to mimic real life. We also added some new behaviors, and one was covering coughs and sneezes in their elbow. So there was actually a little animation. They could issue the command to cover their coughs and sneezes. And then they could also see how many of their friends they protected from the Y flu and the Y me flu by covering their coughs and sneezes and washing their hands. So a really neat way to target that audience, because there aren't other games are a great way to target younger children, and we haven't done a lot of other work in that area, but this event has been hugely successful. And I should say, at the end of the event, we have a live party, a vaccination celebration, where kids can come and ask questions of a flu expert in real time, and they answer. And our expert is at the end of the table. She's been playing that role for a couple of years, and we're very grateful to Janine. And actually, let's see, I'll show a few more resources. These are some general numbers. And then Janine's actually going to tell you a little bit more about some of our flu collaborations. These are some great resources, we hope, for you all. We have the metrics dashboard that Ann mentioned. And if for some reason, you know, maybe you're pitching an idea to someone about an idea you have for using social media, at cdc.gov/metrics, you can come and see our numbers for an activity and see how different tools have played out, how well they've been picked up. You can look at different campaigns there specifically and see all of our H1N1 numbers over the past year. We also hope that you'll be able to use our social media guidelines. These are available. You can navigate to them from cdc.gov/social media, but this is the full address. And what we've done here is break down into each channel. And for each channel, we've developed a multi-page document that kind of takes you through the process of setting it up, best practices you should consider, examples of how it's been done. And these were originally developed for within CDC use. So they are targeted to that audience. But we hope that you'll find them useful for your application too. And then finally, at cdc.gov/social media, we've pulled together descriptions of all of our tools and channels, how we're using them at CDC, and some additional resources there for you. So I'm going to give you all of our contact information. Please do follow us on Twitter and connect with us on Facebook. And at that point, I'm going to turn it over to our next speaker.